really interesting research in one of the Nature journals this week from Australia, looking at the microbiome of First Nations babies, First Nations infants, and comparing them to infants, non-Indigenous infants, in urban settings in Australia, and an amazing insight into these children who are growing up in fairly remote locations, and they got a real surprise from the findings. And you and I spoke to the lead researcher on the paper, Professor Len Harrison of the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute for Medical Research and the University of Melbourne.
I propose that we look at the gut microbiome of Indigenous infants as an indicator of their health and also as a baseline foundation really for understanding why they might later on develop chronic non-communicable diseases like diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, all of which they're at much higher risk for than non-Indigenous individuals.
What did you find, Len, when it came to the gut microbiome of these Indigenous infants that you tested? What did you find compared to their non-Indigenous counterparts?
Yeah, so we compared the gut microbiomes of Indigenous infants here living remotely in northeast Arnhem Land with the gut microbiomes of age and sex-matched non-Indigenous infants living in urban Australia. And we found that, to our surprise, frankly, that the Indigenous infants had a much richer and more diverse gut microbiome than the non-Indigenous infants. Even though they're still exposed to a remote environment and some traditional foods, they do have access to Western diet, and we didn't think that the differences would be so striking.
When you look at the differences, I'm sorry to get down into the weeds, you showed a greater alpha diversity. Now, that's a measure of gut health. You know, when you've got greater alpha diversity, your immune system is set lower, you've got less inflammation going on in the body. I mean, it looked like good news for the health of these infants, the pattern that you found.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is good news. It's a really good news story. It means that they start life with a healthy gut microbiome and that it hasn't been transmitted intergenerationally to them. If they develop the sort of gut microbiome that urban people or children have as they consume a Western diet, if they do, it'll be acquired later on. And I guess one of the corollaries of all this is to now make sure that we try and institute some sort of programs that might avert that from happening.
Why is it that these children are at higher risk of chronic diseases? Is it that we think that the gut microbiome changes with westernisation, or are there other factors?
We don't know the answer yet, but my proposal would be that, yes, they start life with a very healthy-looking gut microbiome, but they're then subjected eventually to the dangers of a Western diet. They succumb to that, and that changes the whole picture. Now, in addition to that, I think that they are more highly susceptible to these changes, these Western diet-induced changes, than probably non-Indigenous populations, because I suspect that they have evolved to have very strong immune responses to infection. The trade-off for that is that when they then have a Western diet that's high in fat, in particular, which is gobbled up by immune cells called macrophages, they make inflammation, which then go on to promote these chronic cardiometabolic disorders.
Len, I just wondered, you mentioned before that you collaborated with Indigenous elders from the community and there are also Indigenous authors on the study. Was there a reason that this particular community was chosen for the study? Was there something about the diet or the remoteness or the geography?
Well, there was something about the remoteness. The diet we sort of had to evaluate. But I think it was really driven by the willingness of the community to participate in such studies. And I don't take any responsibility for making it happen. I mean, that was my colleague, Professor Beverly Biggs from the Doherty Institute, who started this fieldwork for this study.
So how does this information translate into the real world? What kinds of things can actually be done?
Yeah, well, the first thing that we need to do is to go back to the local community and explain to them what the microbiome is and how important it is to health and so on. But then we need to emphasise the importance of keeping it that way and how it is kept that way by avoiding the types of components of a Western diet that we know are not healthy.
But if you were to say that to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, particularly a remote one, they'd say, well, You can bang on all you like about that, Professor Harrison, but we kind of know what to do, but we can't buy it. And if we could buy it, we can't afford it.
Yeah, well, we need to use this sort of information to convince, you know, the authorities that we need to subsidise healthy foods in that environment, as well as us educating the community about healthy eating. That's not an easy task. I mean, it's much easier to measure the microbiome than it is to change people's behaviour, including non-Indigenous people.
How much of this is genes? Increasingly, it's being realised that it's not just your diet that defines your microbiome, it's actually the genes that you carry as well. So how much of this do you believe is the fact that these kids are the children of their parents and the parent, you know, for generations, if not thousands of years, they've carried the genes that predispose to this microbiome?
I don't believe that your genome determines the majority of your microbiome. I think we get a core microbiome at birth, which we hang on to, but around that core microbiome, you know, you can change things dramatically with diet, with a whole lot of environmental factors, including ones that are hard to measure, like, you know, social stress, which is an issue in these communities as well. So we can change things, and we don't have to change things with this lot. We just have to keep it the way it is, because it's 114 species different between Indigenous and non-Indigenous children, thousands more bacteria, viruses and fungi compared to the non-Indigenous children. I mean, that is partly due to the genetics, but it's also, I think, a reflection of the remote environment and the traditional diet.
Just finally, Len, to what extent is this a window into history, that a window that might be disappearing? In other words, we can see what things would have been like in times gone by.
Absolutely, Norman. The bacteria that are almost exclusive to the Australian Indigenous infants have vanished from the non-Indigenous infant population. We don't see them. And we know that some of them are actually quite critical for good health. So we're seeing a snapshot of history as it was in the pre-industrial time.
And that was the study lead, Professor Len Harrison from the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute for Medical Research and the University of Melbourne.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.